WrestleSpective Radio is not affiliated with World Wrestling Entertainment, TNA Wrestling, Ring of Honor Wrestling, or any other sports entertainment entity or personality.
You're listening to WrestleSpective Radio. Learn to love it.
And welcome to WrestleSpective Radio at fairtoflare.com. I'm Jason Mann, and with me today is Kay Sawyer Paul, also of fairtoflare.com. How are you doing today?
I am draped in neon.
Wow. Are you like going to like a Jeff Hardy convention or
No, we're talking about WrestleMania 8. This was the most neon of all the WrestleManias.
Ah, very good point. Yes, this is the early 90s were definitely the neon era of in the world. So,
but they never did another one. This was the only WrestleMania that neon was very, very present.
I don't know. I don't know if we look back at like WrestleMania 9 or 10, I would bet there is a significant
amount. Were almost no graphics in WrestleMania 9 or 10.
Okay. All right. Well,
they were like the least produced of all the WrestleManias, those two.
Okay. Well,
and WrestleMania 9's graphics were all like old Roman Colosseum style.
That's true. Well, as far as like the outfits themselves, like the tights and the trunks that the wrestlers like
wore. Oh
like
god, a, yeah.
I recall pretty, you know, there were some pretty bright colors the Steiners would be wearing, for instance. But
oh, sure.
Yes. But anyway, so we're talking about the final match as we are going through all the final matches in WrestleMania history. And today we're talking about Hulk Hogan against Sid Justice. And this was this was supposed to be Hulk Hogan's retirement match. At least it was billed as such, essentially. It was sort of a little bit up in the air whether he would wrestle again, but it was certainly he was leaving at this point. He was going to be gone for a while. It was the end of an era. And basically, the whole situation started at the Royal Rumble 92, which many believe, including myself, is the greatest Royal Rumble of all time. And the
I'll second that.
And the finish comes when Sid dumps Hulk Hogan, and then Hulk Hogan grabs Sid's arms, feeling betrayed, and Flair is able to dump Sid with Hogan's assistant, thus giving Flair, of course, his first WWE championship. And really, you know, that's interesting because, of course, the version that I watched, which was I watched a package just basically like explaining, like showing all the Sid stuff before WrestleMania 8. And they insert the boos when Sid dumps Hogan. But in the actual happening, there were no boos. In fact, there were some boos when Hogan grabbed Sid. And it was one of the first times where Hogan was pitted against somebody where Hogan did not get like the universal babyface reaction, excepting an instance like when he was facing the Ultimate Warrior, another huge babyface. But whenever, you know, he was faced against, you know, somebody who was going to be turning heel, Hogan would get the support. But this time it was different. People, you know, at least first they, you know, kind of back Sid, and, you know, kind of with good reason. Like Hogan was a complete baby there.
Mm-hmm. Total cheater.
Yeah. Yeah, actually Hogan did that sort of thing a lot. He was sort of known for playing by his own rules. So
okay.
The second big element is there's a press conference with WWE President Jack Tunney and the five top contenders, who are Sid, Hogan, Randy Savage, The Undertaker, and Roddy Piper. And Hulk Hogan is named the number one contender for the WWF Championship and is going to get the title at WrestleMania. One note that I noticed here is that Hogan is wearing his Hulkamania t-shirt and they're all sitting at tables. And then when the announcement is made, Hogan stands up. He's really excited. Sid's really mad. And I'm really, really love the Zubaz pants that Hogan is rocking in there. Like it was very
1992.
Classic. Yes. Yes. Then Sid sort of does an he does a promo afterward that actually was really, really good. He did a couple of really strong promos setting up this, which Sid was always kind of considered pretty weak in that department, but I don't know, whoever was coaching him or they just got good takes or whatever happened, he was pretty awesome setting this up.
Mm-hmm.
Then he does a little insincere apology, which you can kind of which anyone in the right mind could tell was complete BS. But apparently, Hulk Hogan, being a dummy, decided to team with him at Saturday Night's Main Event against Undertaker and Ric Flair, which is the only WWE national television match involving Hogan and Flair during this time. They wrestled at house shows and they wrestled on like at Madison Square Garden television, but as far as national television, this was the only time that I'm aware of anyway. So
yeah.
And then the remaining angles, basically Sid runs through a bunch of jobbers. He threatens Brutus at the barber shop and smashing the window with a chair and gets some white powder on his face as Brutus scurries, and he breaks Virgil's nose. And he also adds Harvey Whippleman as his manager, who I always thought really made Sid look like cheap, you know. Like I just thought like Harvey Whippleman was like so.
He didn't need a manager.
Yeah, but yeah, right. He didn't need a manager, and Harvey Whippleman just like I don't know. He just seemed like really sleazy and like, and I know that's obviously to get heat, but it just like seemed like it was like not like a main event level guy. Like it was like an opening match kind of guy, you know. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I didn't care for Harvey Whippleman. And that basically was established. There was a really cool, I think like 2 hour special or 1 hour special where like Hogan sat down with Vince and they showed like a lot of Hogan's great matches, and then they have like Vince there and he like, you know, like shakes Hogan's hand and thanks him for all the memories. And, you know, it was, you know, like a pretty like good, like emotional thing. Like I remember watching it, like I kind of was like at this point, I had kind of been a little bit like out of wrestling for like about a year or so. Like I'd followed it a little bit, but really wasn't paying attention, but just kind of the idea that like, cause I assumed like almost everybody else that it was going to be Hogan and Flair at this WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I was obviously excited to see that being a longtime fan. And then when they didn't, I immediately kind of lost interest, you know, and kind of faded out of wrestling for the most part for a few years. But, you know, this was kind of led to a mini resurgence for me. So that was basically the buildup of the match. Do you have anything to add?
No, other than the fact that everybody was weirded out that WrestleMania 8 was not Hogan and Flair.
Yeah.
And it took years for people to sort of figure out maybe why it wasn't. And an answer is still not clear.
Okay.
Right? You can look at a couple of things and say, okay, well, maybe they did it because of this or maybe they did it because of that. There still isn't really like an official – nobody sat like Vince McMahon down and asked, hey, what happened here? Because you were clearly building up to Hogan and Flair up until the press conference, it seemed like.
I don't entirely think that's true because I've read observers from the time, like even before the Royal Rumble, that made it pretty clear that they were doing Hogan Sid and that they believed that Hogan Sid was the big match of the time. And, and that because, you know, they did Hogan Flair at house shows, like in the fall of 91, like right after Flair had come. Mm-hmm. And they did, I mean, they did like pretty well, but they did not like do like super fantastic, you know, business like you would just expect like the dream match of, you know, the 80s to do. And I think part of that is because both Flair and Hogan at this point were diminished versions of themselves. I mean, Flair had a couple rough years in WCW where, you know, WCW had just, you know, like, he just wasn't quite the same. Like he was, you know, he was getting older. You could just kind of see like, you know, that he just, you know, wasn't as hot of a character as he'd been. He just kind of, you know, had, just kind of, I don't know if like recycling the old stuff is quite fair because, you know, he's still a great wrestler. And obviously, you know, he had a, you know, he's still going today 20 years later. So it, you know, it's not like he was done by any means, but it just, like, you know, it wasn't the Ric Flair of 1988. And quite frankly, it wasn't the Hogan of 1988. I mean, Hogan, you know, had been on top forever. And you can even sort of tell in this feud, like, they sort of had told, like, all the stories they could with Hogan. And, you know, they kind of recycled the old, you know, partner, you know, friend of Hogan turns on, betrays Hogan, and Hogan has to get revenge. And, you know, that story, you know, was told many times and worked very many times, but this time it just, you know, didn't have the same, you know, panache behind it. We'd seen it before. And, you know, even though, yeah, like, obviously Hogan and Flair was like a new and a big thing, it was just, it wasn't the Flair from 88, it wasn't the Hogan from 88, just, like, you know, and wrestling, you know, had cooled off. It wasn't, you know, what it was, you know, a few years later. And I think people were expecting it to, you know, to be what it would have been, and to revive things, what revive things back to, like, 1988 levels. But, you know, just that didn't work out. And you know, obviously, you know, at that point, WWE, you know, Vince McMahon and everyone, you know, didn't know what the future was going to hold. So they didn't know, like, hey, we're just in a funk for a few years. There's not a whole lot we can do, or, you know, we're going to have to, like, figure out, like, a completely new template to, you know, revive wrestling. And obviously it took, you know, 4 years to figure that out, or even more in WWE's case. So I just, I think those are the reasons. I mean, I don't think it was, you know, it was probably the plan when, I'm pretty certain it was probably the plan when Flair debuted. And, you know, the other thing about WWE, just one last point, is, you know, they were facing all the steroid, you know, scandals, and, you know, Hogan was, you know, had, you know, been sort of exposed for his lies on steroids, and that hurt his popularity too. So it was just like, you know, like I said, you know, they just weren't, you know, at the same level as they had been. So, yeah, I mean, like, I know Meltzer's sort of, you know, talked about that. You know, Dave Meltzer's sort of talked about that a number of times, is where, you know, it just sort of really, you know, they just didn't see Hogan and Flair as, you know, as their marquee match at that point. I think there were, you know, some valid reasons for that, even though, yeah, it seems ridiculous in hindsight, considering, you know, that, you know, obviously Hogan and Flair was the big thing and they did great years later. And, you know, those old guys helped revive WCW. But, you know, at the time they really, you know, weren't really working as well as, you know, they had been, or, you know, or they would have been expected to. And it certainly seemed reasonable that it was about going to be about time to move on to the new generation.
Do you look at that then as a brave move by WWE to not go with the obvious story?
Well, I don't know. I feel like WWE's status quo when things aren't going great is to go with the big guys. So I guess, you know, but they probably saw Sid as somebody they could invest in long term, just because, I mean, if you look at everything except for ability in the ring, I mean, he could have been, you know, really one of the big stars. I mean, he was fairly young. He had an incredible look. He could, you know, he was really good intensity, you know, it just, you know, between the ropes and I guess between the ears was, were his problems, you know, and the fact that he was flaky. In fact, he didn't even last, he barely lasted a month after this show. So, you know, I, you know, he was a young guy who, in theory, if he could have gotten better and could have been sane, or, you know, at least reliable, then, you know, he could have really been a big deal in wrestling. I mean, he was a big deal anyway, but he could have really been, like, you know, one of the, you know, biggest stars in wrestling.
He did headline two WrestleManias. You can't take that away from him.
That's true. I'd like to, but unfortunately you can't, you know, because they were probably the two worst WrestleMania main events. But certainly one of them, I think, was by far the WrestleMania.
Now, I have to say that this, although not a good match, although not a good WrestleMania main event, none of this is Sid's fault.
Let me
go into the match and describe, and I'll explain why none of this is Sid's fault.
Okay.
So it's a short match. It's 10, 12 minutes long. Although I gotta say, that's, you know, post Warrior Hogan, that's sort of it for Hogan matches, right? 10, 12 minutes. It starts with Hogan coming into the ring, actually just, like, punching Sid out of the ring, gets him out just by punching him, and then continues to pose in a pretty kind of funny get out of my ring, I have a giant ego moment.
Yeah, and all, the music's playing all through.
Yeah, the whole time. Yeah, never stops.
The music cue, the music guy missed his cue.
Sid comes. A lot of people missed their cue in this match.
Yeah.
Sid comes back in, starts punching down Hogan, and Hogan is selling these punches like he's about to die. Crazy delivery by Hogan. And he just like a couple of seconds of offense here. Hogan comes back a little bit, and then they do this like test of strength thing, which was popular with people who didn't like to move around in the ring much.
Sure.
Had they done a test of strength in a WrestleMania main event before this?
Yeah, they did it. They did it at Warrior Hogan for sure. Well,
that's right, because there was the big like equal strength thing there. That is not the case in this match. Sid just like. During the test of strength, they lock arms and Hogan is on the ground within 2 seconds.
Yeah.
Just to bowl over the fact that Sid is this incredibly powerful man. Mm-hmm. Like he's murdering Hogan within 2 or 3 minutes. And it looks like he's done. Like after 3 or 4 minutes, it looks like Hogan is just a dead man, because even though Sid hasn't done much, Hogan has taken it with such assault that you think that, you know, of course it's Hogan's last match, because Sid is so powerful, and he's obviously the next huge villain of the show, and the next year is going to revolve around Sid dominating everybody. And then Sid goes for this is before the powerbomb. He does that like a Vulcan nerve pinch. Kind of thing. Something that Yokozuna would do in the main event the year later to put everybody to sleep. Mm-hmm. Same move. I think it's one of the laziest like rest holds out there.
Yes, it's probably even lazier than the chin lock.
I don't know if it's lazier than the chin lock. At least you gotta like get down on one knee with the chin lock.
Yeah.
You know,
it's close. You know.
I like the story of this match, though, that Sid is just this incredibly powerful figure that Hogan has simply never faced before. Mm-hmm. Sid doesn't fall down until the last couple seconds, right?
Yeah, that's true. My thing, I guess, is that would be a much better story if Sid had like the kind of offense that looked really vicious and really powerful.
Yeah. Yeah,
He can do, you know, he does the choke slam that, puts Hogan down for a while. Mm-hmm. And then, like, Sid, instead of covering, in fact, he doesn't even do a cover. He just, like, weirdly, like, talks to the camera and mugs, like, with Harry Whippleman, sort of like the guys would do all the time in WCW, like, actually talking to the camera. But I don't think I've ever seen anybody do that in WWE except for here.
I got this in my notes here. I wanted to ask you, did people consider Sid to be a WCW guy at this point?
Much
like they considered Flair to be a WCW guy?
I don't think so. I mean, like, people probably knew he was in WCW, but it wasn't, like, the same type of thing. Sid never been champion or anything like that. You know, and really, his time in WCW wasn't actually significantly long, you know. So I think he was just more of a, you know, like of a wrestler who they just kind of brought in and you know, he'd wrestle other places, but it wasn't nearly like the same connection with WCW that Flair.
Sure. Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. I was just thinking that because you've got two guys who didn't work for the company a year before in two of the main events, and they were both considered pretty large WCW characters.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there was definitely the connection, but like I said, it wasn't as heavy of a connection as it would have been for Flair.
So Sid, they break out of like the nerve pinch, and then Sid hits a side slam, and then a power bomb, which I found very surprising watching this match again. I forgot that Hulk Hogan could be power bombed,
yeah.
Let alone in the WWF.
Sure.
Right? I thought maybe somebody might have power bombed him in WCW, but I honestly couldn't think of who would have. I can't think of who else would have ever power bombed Hogan.
I think Nash did. I think he power bombed Hogan when Hogan
for is that when the, they broke off the NWO into two things?
I'm sure there's probably an instance during that era. I was thinking it would have happened during the finish of the Nitro where Hogan beat Savage for the title.
Okay.
I'm thinking that Hogan powerbombed Nash powerbombed Hogan, then Bret Hart came in and hit Nash with a chair or something, and then turned over and put Hogan on top of Savage, and then Hogan won the title.
Right.
I believe that came off a powerbomb. Not 100% sure, but I'm guessing if anyone did, it was probably Nash. Maybe
but
Sid
we,
too.
So we can fairly say that this might be the only time Hogan's ever received a powerbomb.
It would certainly be one of only a few times, at least on television. Yeah. Well, the powerbomb was – I mean, Sid was the first guy in the U.S. to do a powerbomb that I'm aware of, you know, at least as a major move and, you know, and it being like a big thing. I mean, I think actually like Judy Martin did a powerbomb to one of the Jumping Bomb Angels like in 88 or something. But beyond that, I think Sid was really the first guy in, you know, one of the major companies to do it and for it to be a big thing. And he may have actually been the first guy to do a choke slam. In either WWE or WCW, because
it's not weird of me to look at that powerbomb happening and think, whoa, that's out of place.
No, I mean, you know, for the time, it was certainly, you know, it was I mean, he was the first guy to do it, and you know, it certainly was probably the first guy to do it to Hogan.
Yeah.
Maybe in Japan or something, but
and it looked devastating too. Like Hogan again is just selling like death.
Yeah, well, you know, one thing, you know, Sid could do, he could do a mean powerbomb, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And of course, he tries to pin him, and Hogan does the hulking, and this is where everything starts to go wonky. Hogan does the regular Hulk up that he's done for the last seven WrestleManias to huge paychecks and great acclaim. He hits Sid with the big boot, and Sid doesn't fall down.
Yeah.
He just sort of staggers around. Hogan hits him again. He power slams him.
Body slam.
Finally.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. You're right. It is. It's a body slam. There's a big difference. Do we want to teach the kids what the difference is?
Well, okay. The power slam, the person who is performing the move goes down on top of the man. Where on a body slam is simply lifting the man up and dropping him down.
Right.
But
body slams him.
I mean, the thing I found amusing about this was that Bobby Heenan seemed skeptical whether Hogan could
He'll never get him up, he says. Yeah.
Could get
he's not up. Andre.
Yes. He's not 700 pounds, you know.
No. Sid seems like the kind of guy that I could, like, if I wrapped my arms around him, I could lift him off the ground. You know, okay. Maybe not body slam him, but like, you know, an inch or so.
Yeah, sure. I'm sure you're a pretty strong guy, but you could do that.
So strong. body slams him, hits the leg drop, and we all think, well, this is the end of the match.
Yes.
But it's not.
No.
Sid kicks out.
Yes.
He just kicks out.
He does.
Is he the first guy to kick out?
Of the leg drop. Is he the first guy to kick out of the leg drop?
Wasn't Warrior, because Hogan didn't actually hit the leg drop on Warrior, right? He sort of missed it.
Yeah, well, he misses at the end, and then Warrior does the splash. I forget if he hit it earlier. I don't think he does hit it earlier. I think...
Well, if he did hit it earlier in the match, then it didn't finish the match, did it?
Right. It may have been on a referee bump. No, but I don't. Yeah, I think this is the first time somebody actually kicked out at two on the leg drop.
And WWE is usually so good about taking a big moment like that and really reveling in it. But instead, like the camera turns away. We've got Whippleman up on the canvas. Sid kicks out and almost nobody stops to really mention it.
Yeah.
And this is where things get just odd, because Whippleman comes in. He doesn't come in. Hogan stands up, doesn't keep attacking Sid, stands up, goes to grab Whippleman, brings him into the ring, doesn't lay a hand on him, mm-hmm. but he's just holding him, and you hear the bell. The bell rings.
Yes.
The match is over. For what? Though, nothing has happened to make the match over. Right? We think maybe because Whippleman's interfered, but he hasn't. He just got brought into the ring by Hogan.
Right.
You would never disqualify anyone for that ever in a normal circumstance.
Yeah, at least not you know, after 1982.
And so you think, okay, well, maybe Hogan got disqualified? Because he's the only one who's done something maybe wrong. Right? Sid hasn't cheated up until this point.
Right.
Certainly not around the time the bell rang. He was on the ground doing nothing. Bell rings. The camera pans to the entranceway where Papa Shango is running down. I'll get into what was supposed to happen after that. That's okay. I'm going to narrate what actually happens.
Right.
It's so weird.
Yeah.
Papa Shango runs down. It takes forever because it's a long entranceway. Comes in, starts attacking Hogan. Sid gets up. They start attacking Hogan together. Now it's a two-on-one thing. Sid goes out to grab a chair so that he can beat on Hogan more, I guess. And we hear the music of the Ultimate Warrior. A guy who we haven't seen since SummerSlam 1991, 6 months before. And it's a huge crowd reaction. People go pretty nuts at this. Warrior runs down 180 miles an hour like an idiot, like he always does. Runs in the ring. Takes out Shango and Sid immediately. We never see those two ever again. Hogan is confused, I guess. But also, you can tell that Hogan's pissed off. Because Hogan knows that something went wrong. And Hogan is clearly just exasperated that things didn't go the right way. But Warrior's music's playing. He's celebrating. The good guys are in the ring. The bad guys have run away. So who cares? And this is sort of what Warrior's trying to tell Hogan. He's like, whatever, we won. Yay. Big idiot. And Hogan, you can tell, he's like, no, I wanted the 1-2-3. I wanted this to go well. This didn't go well. And you hear Monsoon and Heenan saying, oh, is it his last match? We don't know. Is Hulkamania still around? It sounds like it. We don't know. We're confused, too. And the show ends with the two of them doing Hogan poses with fireworks. What an odd ending. What an odd ending. Now, what was supposed to happen, Jason?
What was supposed to happen is, my understanding is that Papa Shango was supposed to come into the ring and break up the pin before the two count. Mm. And unfortunately, he missed his cue, and or somebody mistelling him his cue, and he did not run down in time. And so they had improvised. Like, it looked like Whippleman was getting up on the apron. Like, you know, it appeared as though he was trying to get the ref, to distract the ref before he went down to make the count, but the ref either just ignored him or didn't see him or, you know, just, you know, wasn't thinking or whatever. So the ref actually, you know, made the count without, you know, if the ref had managed to, you know, see the distraction himself, that would have at least sort of saved it. But unfortunately, he did not.
Now, that's what they planned to do.
Yes.
Why do you think they thought that was a good ending?
Probably because they didn't, but they wanted to protect Sid, and they figured that doing a DQ would be the best course of action, and they also figured that with Warrior coming out to save, no one would particularly care, which sort of was the way it worked, because once Warrior came out, I think everyone just kind of forgot and just was kind of happy that Warrior was back and it wasn't really a big deal.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah, I guess.
Yeah. And Warrior had short hair, so people thought that it was not the same Ultimate Warrior for a
I didn't. Long time. I certainly thought it was a different guy.
Yeah. I don't. I wonder where that rumor came from. Well, the I guess
you
more
look
the rumor
like a different guy.
He didn't look that different, though. I mean,
he looked pretty different.
He was a little smaller, but in the face, I mean, he didn't look, you know,
All right, you're talking to the 9-year-old version of
well,
me.
Well, I mean, I wasn't that much older. I mean, I was this is 13. What, I mean,
you're talking to a bunch of kids who didn't have the internet.
Yeah, but
that's why.
Well, no, I mean, he looked a little different, but like I wonder where like the whole like he was dead like rumor came from, because I mean that was a huge urban legend for a long time.
It was big urban legend that he was dead. A couple things, right? There's the thing with the Ultimate Warrior is that he's a mysterious character on purpose. And there are downsides to having mysterious characters, right? When you say a guy is from parts unknown, well, maybe people are going to, you know, not know where he lives, right? And when you don't know where a guy lives, maybe you can't look him up to make sure he's still alive when it looks like somebody else is playing his role. I don't know. It was weird. I think it is just overactive 9 or 10 year olds that don't have access to the internet who like wrestling. They make up stuff. Word travels around.
Okay. That seems fair. I always wondered like the origins of that. I mean, pretty much all the kids believed. I forget if I ever believed. I guess I probably did at a certain point. I don't know if I ever thought that the guy, you know, that the short-haired Ultimate Warrior was a different guy. I mean, I don't really remember what I thought. But
back in the age of really low-quality TV, though, it was harder to tell as well.
Yeah, okay.
A good TV in 92.
And he wore face paint, too, so it was like, you know.
That's the other thing. You never saw his face.
Yeah. And he was smaller, he had shorter hair, so he did look a little different, but in retrospect it's clearly obvious it was the same guy, but you know, mm-hmm. obviously it's in retrospect. So
here's a bit of fun fantasy booking.
Okay.
If this match had gone the way it was supposed to go, mm-hmm. and if everything had gone right and if Hogan had gotten what he wanted, mm-hmm. do you think that would have actually been his last match?
No.
Nah, me neither.
Yeah. No,
one can dream though, can't we?
Well, I think Hogan.
No,
had,
he did great in WCW.
Yeah, I think
afterwards
he had a lot of fun stuff. I mean, I know we have sort of different feelings on Hogan, but
no, but I agree. Hollywood Hogan was an important contribution.
Yeah,
and you know, we couldn't have wrestling would not be the same without that character.
Yeah, so. A couple things I want to make note of is that when the fact that the music was playing during the first sequence when Hogan was clearing the ring of Sid, Jesse Ventura definitely would have pointed out the issue with the music that somebody missed their cue or something. I totally think that would be a Jesse Ventura thing to say, whereas Heenan just played along and ignored it. I also enjoy Bobby, but I do – one nice Bobby Heenanism is decrying the fact that Hogan was being so enormously cheered by the fans and getting what he called a godlike treatment. And
I wrote down the line. I wanted to use it here. He said I've got it here somewhere. They're chanting his name like he's a god. Hulk. Hulk, Hulk. He's just a human being, an annoying human being.
Yes,
I love like that line.
Very good. Yes. So good. Good hedonism. Always enjoy that. Yeah. Let's see.
My feeling of it was though that it wasn't a great match, but it was okay. But it was like the fourth best match on the card.
Let's see.
Like, this was a pretty solid WrestleMania outside of, like, there were a couple, like, weird kind of gimmicky matches that were dumb, but, like, and this main event. But other than that, it was a really solid show.
Yes. Like, yeah. I mean,
easily Savage and Flair put on a hugely superior performance.
Yeah. Piper Brett's also really
and
great.
And Piper and Brett is great. And then people forget a lot about that opener between Shawn Michaels and Tito Santana. That was technically excellent.
Yeah. It's a fun match.
Yeah.
Agreed. There's an 8-man tag that's just sort of there. There's the Undertaker Jake Roberts match, which is.
That one. And that one's not bad.
Yeah. It's a fun, just, you know, like Taker just completely destroying Jake Roberts. I mean, yeah. You know, it's one of those more like not technically good, but just entertaining and fun kind of deals.
And that was the other side of the Savage story.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
That finished that off.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah. As far as the show overall, yeah, it's, you know, it is really good. Absolutely. I really love, I mean, Savage Flair, obviously, but Piper Brett's one people, I think, forget about, but it's almost as good. Mm-hmm. And it's just, you know, terrific little story.
Yeah.
And the last thing I wanted to bring up is I like how this, like, there's, like, this is sort of like a whole, like, Warrior coming out just kind of like as a bookend to the whole Hogan Sid Warrior story, where Sid was the referee at SummerSlam 91 and the Warrior Hogan against Slaughter, Iron Sheik, and Colonel General Adnan. And then at the end of it, after they win, Warrior just like walks off and completely disappears, and it's
Sid. Well, he doesn't walk off. He chases off the three guys or two of them.
Okay.
Leaving,
well,
Hogan with
Slaughter.
He never
comes back is the point.
No, he never comes back.
And he walks out of WWE, you know, essentially.
That was WWE's like sitcom character walks upstairs is never talked about again.
Right. Yeah, that's
the equivalent there.
That's a good illustration. Yeah.
He just ran away, then they never mentioned him again.
Yes. So now he's back. And Hogan's gone, and they set up a Warrior Sid feud. But then Sid walks off. They actually did. I looked it up. They did two matches on house shows, one of them in Toledo, where I didn't live in Toledo anymore, but I was born in Toledo and went to three wrestling shows in Toledo, so I could have.
Were they atrocious?
I would imagine they would have been atrocious because it's Warrior Sid. I would imagine it probably would have been like the worst thing ever. But I mean, although I enjoy great wrestling, I also enjoy watching horrible wrestling, and
that would have been fascinating. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And that now, of course, Warrior's, you know, the guy left in of those three, and then of course, he doesn't last very long either. So, you know, I just I enjoy how this kind of bookends that story without really even like intending to.
It. When you pay attention to the next like couple of months, it is kind of really easy to see how they ended up with Bret Hart as champ, right? Because you got at WrestleMania 8, you've got Savage, Flair, Hogan, Sid, these four big guys, and then Warrior comes out. You got five huge main eventers, thinking like, oh, you can run this for a long time, and then over the course of 6 months, like. All five of them just drop off, right? Flair being the last one, really. But at that point, they realized that they needed to really do something, right? But four of them just drop off one after the other after the other. And then and of course, the mindset has to be, well, who's around that we know will be here next month?
Yeah.
And of course, you end up with Bret Hart.
Yeah. And of course, that was also the, you know, the peak of the steroids thing. So it's like, well, who's a
guy
who can work, who... You know, who doesn't use steroids or, you know, or at least, doesn't have that look who can be around. Yeah. It does make sense in retrospect. And obviously, you know, Warrior and Savage were still around for a while, Savage and Flair, you know, stuck around through, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, the fall 92 is when Savage started to, like, commentate.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, they phased him out once he lost the title in wrestling, and then Flair was gone. Obviously, January '93.
Yeah.
So you're right; it didn't take too much longer. Yeah. But this is definitely sort of the very interesting transitional in '92 and '93. Very much, you know, going from, you know, the, you know, '93 and '94 in a lot of ways were, and '95 were rebuilding years for WWE as they were, you know, kind of figuring out and. You know, their talent pool certainly changed and, you know, in some ways dwindled, really.
I don't think they ever got back to the roster that they had in 88, 89 in terms of numbers.
Oh, probably not. They did get pretty big.
I felt like they had 400 guys at that in that time.
But maybe in the invasion time, they may have gotten pretty close. But in kind of the brand split, I mean, they expanded when they did the brand split.
That's true.
But yeah, you're right. I mean, yeah, they definitely downsized in between 92 and 93 in that roster, and you know,
I think they were down to like 35 guys at one point.
I'm not sure.
That's low. You know, like around like 94, I think there just weren't that many people working.
Well, we can look it up. Let's see. In 1988, actually the total roster in 88 is around 54. It goes up to 61 at one point. And
that's a lot of guys.
That's the main roster. And the 94 is actually just in the mid, it's in the mid to low 40s. So it's definitely, I mean, definitely a change, but it's not quite as dramatic as I was thinking.
Well, you know, I think part of it, I think, is a perception issue. Back in 88, 89, you really didn't know who worked for the company and who didn't, right? It felt like anybody could come through the curtain.
And they did. They had a lot of guys who didn't really last very long or just were there for, you know,
exactly. So like a guy who could come in for 3 months and do a tour.
Yeah, whereas still, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Whereas in 94, you know, you got a pretty tight roster. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. Yeah, 93, yeah, 45, 49. So basically around that number. So it was definitely a smaller roster, no question about that. And if you know, looking at the names of some of these guys, you know, even in the 93 were guys who weren't really around the whole time. I mean, I think even Lawler is on here, and you know, obviously he was doing commentary a lot of the time, and Savage was on here, and he was doing commentary a lot of the time, and it includes Brooklyn Brawler, you know, obviously.
Oh well, that doesn't count.
Yeah, but most of the guys were full time guys. So, but anyway, so that's you can see those at Soli.org, by the way, for listeners who want to look at those rosters. Yeah. So, anything else to share about Hogan and Sid?
I think it was the only botched main event in WrestleMania history, right?
Well,
it's important in that regard.
Well, other than maybe Lesnar and Angle.
Okay, but that's not that was a move that they screwed up. Right. Well, wasn't like an entire ending.
Well, it basically affected the entire ending because it was supposed to be the finish and then they had to come up with something different.
True. Okay. But that failure was based on a split second decision. Right. Or a split second accident. Sorry. It wasn't something that could have been. I feel like that one couldn't have really been helped. Whereas this one just felt dumb.
I'll agree with you. Sure, yeah, I'll agree with you there, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Like, Lesnar was trying to be Icarus, right? He was trying to go far beyond what people thought he could do, and he proved to be simply mortal. Whereas here, it's just like, you know, like, go to the ring when you're supposed to go to the ring. It's not that hard. That's what they have the gorilla position for.
Yeah. That's yes. The degree of difficulty of the Lesnar mistake was far greater than the degree of difficulty of the Papa Shango mistake.
Thank you.
Yes, I will absolutely grant you that.
So for historical importance, I'd say that is really what you leave from this match, because it's I don't know. Both of them have better WrestleMania main events. You know, it's odd to say, but Sid had a better match than this.
Oh, no. I don't agree with that.
You disagree. You think Undertaker's is worse.
It's so much worse.
You know what? Do you have a guy talking with about the Undertaker one already?
I do have somebody talking about it.
Okay, if he backs out, I want that match with you and me.
Okay.
Because that I think is a point of contention. I think that one's awesome. Again, for all the like I love bad wrestling reasons, but I think 13's wicked.
All right. Yeah. Well, we'll have to have some sort of discussion about that, even if.
But I'm also the guy who wrote 1,500 words on the Slammiversary main event with Samoa Joe and Kurt Angle, where every single TNA belt was on the line, and I thought that was awesome. Maybe I'm not the most objective quality control guy.
That may have been a different argument. Well, you know, I'm the guy who loves the at Halloween Havoc 98 the Rick Steiner against Scott Steiner and the Giant, followed by Rick Steiner and Scott Steiner matches, where Rick Steiner exacts his revenge on his brother. So, you know, I can enjoy entertaining crap too, but I consider I just consider Sid and Undertaker to be awful, boring, heatless, dull, terrible wrestling. But you know, I haven't watched it in a long time. Maybe a fresh set of eyes would make it interesting, and I would, and at some point I would love to hear your argument. So we'll have to.
That's what this whole podcast series is about, right?
Absolutely.
Fresh set of eyes.
It is. Yes. So, all right. Well, thanks for another great show. Always enjoy doing these, and everyone.
Oh, I just want to say one last thing.
Yes.
The YouTube video that has the interview with Sid and Warrior at post WrestleMania, There's a comment underneath it that says, "Oh my God, wrestling was so much better when it was like this." I swear to God.
Well, everyone has their likes and dislikes, I guess.
When you put up a YouTube video of wrestling that's over 5 years old, does that comment just get automatically generated?
Probably. There's like a robot that like.
Oh my God, it was so much better when it was like Sid and the Warrior. Jesus Christ! Give me a break.
Well,
let's go back to it being like this.
Yeah. Well. Yeah, maybe they'll bring back Sid and Warrior for the Hall of Fame. Maybe they can do like a little match at WrestleMania.
Oh, like when they do WrestleMania in Parts Unknown, when they win the bid one year.
Exactly. You know, okay.
It's like a nebulous empty void around the ring.
Nice. Yeah. Okay. One thing I want to get in. Well, let's get into this before we close. Like the idea that like that WrestleMania like has to be in a certain city now for like somebody to be inducted. Like I kind of get when that, like when they were like inducting the territorial guys, when that kind of made sense, like, you know, in Texas, they would do the Texas guys and all that. But basically they're done with territorial guys. There aren't like really like anyone who's like going to be like a major, you know, like the head guy for WrestleMania is going to be like a guy who is popular across the country. Mm-hmm. So it feels like the idea that like somebody needs to like, they have to save like somebody for like a certain city, like Rock for Miami is kind of like the last one that makes sense, because, you know, he obviously went to college in Miami and he was, you know, pretty well known for that, you know, but everyone else,
you could do Rock anywhere and you're going to get,
exactly. I mean, yeah. It may be like, there's like a tiny portion that makes it a little bit more special in Miami, but it's very, very, I mean, it, you know, like, yeah.
Also, Rock, we don't know that Rock's getting inducted then.
No, we don't.
He might not. We don't know.
Yeah. People are making that stretch because the Miami announcement, but I'm just saying that, yeah, Rock anywhere would be a huge deal and would be fantastic. And pretty much it's true for anybody. I mean, it doesn't matter where they live or where they are from. I mean, you know, there's very, very, there's almost nobody left who's really associated with a place.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, you know, I don't know. It just feels like there's like a sentiment on the internet where like people feel like, you know, oh, it's going to be here, then you got to induct this guy. And it's kind of like, well,
no, I think that's ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, I could see, you know, in Atlanta with, you know, the WCW connection, having it be like sort of a WCW guys type thing. But
I don't see anybody from WCW getting inducted. In fact, we see the one guy who never really worked in WCW.
Yeah. Well, by the time people listen to this, they will know who. Well, I guess we won't necessarily know who everyone who have been.
Well, I might sound like a fool here, but I put money on very few, if any, WCW guys, just because WWE has a way of doing it. Like sometimes they'll do that where they'll just go the exact opposite route that you'd expect, simply to swerve you.
Possibly true. You know, we'll obviously we'll see. The people who are listening to this show will know much more about who's at the who's being inducted in the Hall of Fame than we will. So we'll see. And hopefully, in the comments, they can on this show they can I can talk about exactly how foolish or how smart we were, and that will be a lot of fun.
Okay.
All right. Well, thanks, everyone, for listening, and goodbye.